going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. We are still in our Revelation and Work series. I've actually added in this episode. It was not originally a part of the four-part series, including the introduction. So now we have a four-part series, not including the introduction. But I'm bringing in this episode because what happens in chapters 12 and 13 has profound implications for work and the church, and profound implications for the rest of the book of Revelation. So in a lot of ways, leaving out this section of the book of Revelation does a disservice to how we understand future episodes. So it actually works out pretty nice, and we get a little more of Revelation here. So today we're talking about Revelations 12 and 13. We've already talked about Revelation 4 and 5 last week. That was sort of the centerpiece of this whole thing. The whole book is kind of based on this throne room scene where we can sort of see things from the eyes of God. So I encourage you to go back and listen to not only the introduction, but that episode to get a feel for sort of where we're at in chapters 12 and 13. So something significant happens in chapter 12. There is a perspective flip that happens in chapter 12. Before this, we've seen God at the throne room, and we've seen the unfolding of God's plan on a small scale to some extent, where it's like sort of from this very earthly perspective and sort of what our eyes can see, you know, from the earth rather than God's. And now it's kind of like this zoom lens is taken, and history itself and God's plan is like zoomed out starting in chapter 12. And in chapter 12, that zoom comes out, and you can see the whole thing from God's perspective, this whole spiritual warfare going on in this large sort of grand scale that only God can see, that's only seen really from heaven. And so now we're seeing history in light of this major scale. We're seeing history in light of really God's perspective of what's really going on around us, the things that cannot be seen, probably definitely things that we cannot even really comprehend. And so now in chapter 12, we're seeing history now from that lens. And so chapter 12 kind of starts history back over when it talking about the woman and the dragon. And so I encourage you to go back and read chapter 12. It's pretty incredible. I love Revelation for the visual nature of it. You can't help but sort of visualize these things. And sometimes that's a little scary, but John is bringing us into this world through our imagination, which is something we don't always know how to use when we're reading texts, especially the Bible. We don't let our imagination sort of run wild, but John's really challenging us to let our imaginations run wild. And so this woman gives birth to a baby and is pursued by the dragon, but is defeated. The dragon's defeated and cast out of heaven by this conquering baby. And so you have this Christ figure and this evil figure, and these characters are introduced, and the woman and the dragon are the church and the devil, right? And so a lot of the rest of the book, actually the narrative of the rest of the book, really focuses on how the dragon and his minions are trying to destroy the woman, really the church, and the people of the church, right? You gotta remember that when John is writing this book, he is writing to a group of Christians that are actually being actively persecuted. We cannot lose focus on that, right? So the point of the book for John is to really encourage the church, right? Like, you may be experiencing these persecution, but there is reason to remain faithful. And that's because there's this bigger battle going on that you have no idea about, where Satan is trying to use everything Satan has in order to lure you away from faithfulness and into following Satan and the ways of the world. And we could get more into that and how it plays out. That's going to be this focus of some of next week's talk a little bit. But John is trying to encourage the church simply to remain faithful, that there's reasons to remain faithful that you cannot even comprehend, which involves God protecting his church. And so in chapter 12, you see this woman give birth to a baby, and then God immediately brings her under protection, where she's protected from the beast or from the dragon in this instance, and taken care of by God, where the dragon's not allowed to destroy her and is preserved by God. And so I want to read a little bit of the end here of chapter 12. So after all this has gone down and the dragon's been hurled down to earth, I'm going to start in verse 13 here in chapter 12. It says, when the dragon saw that he had been hurled to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to a male child. The woman was given the two wings of a great eagle so that she might fly to the place prepared for her in the wilderness, where she would be taken care of for a time, times, and half a time out of the serpent's reach. Then from his mouth, the serpent spewed water like a river to overtake the woman, sweep her away in the torrent. But the earth helped the woman by opening its mouth and swallowing the river that the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. Then the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring, those who keep God's commands and hold fast their testimony about Jesus. And so what we have here is this church being pursued by the dragon, God protecting the dragon, and then the dragon going off to pick off basically individuals involved in the church. And that narrative plays over throughout the rest of the book. In fact, in chapter 13, we're introduced to two more figures, which are the two beasts that are brought about by the dragon in order to fulfill this plan. The dragon out of the water, and the dragon out of the sea, and the dragon out of the earth. And so these two dragons represent sort of the way of the world, as it were. This great city Babylon, which is pictured as this bastion of evil. And so I would see the two beasts that the dragon brings about as the sort of economic, the religious, the civil system that is surrounding the Christians in the first century, and still in a lot of ways in surrounding us today, that seek to take us away from faithfully following Jesus. So these two beasts are brought about in order to take us away from being faithful any longer. And listen, y'all, the beasts and their world are really enticing, right? When we look at these things in the book of Revelation and the way that John has set all this up, the beast, the way of the world looks really enticing. There's like prosperity, right, with these religious systems. They look like they have it all together and everything's going correctly. All these, the civil system and this the economic prowess. So the idea is if you would just follow the beast instead of walking faithfully with Jesus, then your life would be okay, right? Everything would be fine. You could be finally comfortable, and your whole life, everything would be all right if you would just follow the beast and his systems, his way of being, the way of this world as the beasts have set it up, as the dragon really has set it up, the evil one, the devil. And so there's this temptation to not only follow this economic system where there can be profound prosperity, where there's no worries, and just like us today, like there's this profound reality of just following the way that everybody else does, just giving in to the way of the world, honestly. And John's message is that there is good reason to still be faithful, because while all that stuff sort of glitters like gold and looks perfect and beautiful, there's a reality behind it that it's just absolutely deadly. And being unfaithful to God here on earth and giving in to the dragon and the dragon's ways means that we are stepping into a reality that is outside of the faithfulness of God. And while the church may look like it's falling and may look like it's not doing well, and it may look like this beast and his ways are perfect and doing really well, that at the end of the day, God is faithful to protect his bride, the church. God is the one providing protection for the church. When I started a theology of hustle, I set out to really break down this idea that the pastor, that leaders, the ministry leaders, that the only worthwhile job and vocation for the kingdom of God was those roles, like being a missionary, being a pastor. Those are the only callings that really matter, and everything else is just sort of supporting that in some way, right? But the people doing that work are the people that are really doing kingdom work. And obviously, like if you haven't listened to 150 or so episodes, basically all of them are saying that functionally. So you could get a little bit of the Cliff's Notes there. There's some great stories you should go back and listen to, but that's the Cliff's Notes, that that is not true. I want to break down the idea that is true, because I believe there's value in everybody's work. And that's what we're unpacking in this series on Revelation. But what I think that I did not quite understand was, when we have this idea that the only thing that matters is the role of the leader in the church, the pastor, the ministry leader, we begin to believe that the church is only there for that person. And without that person, there would be no church. And I think what you're seeing in our world right now is this idea that the ministry surrounds that person in charge. And now we're just watching the narcissism of believing that fall apart. I don't know if you've been listening to sort of, you know, the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast. I've been listening to the Gangster Capitalism podcast on Jerry Falwell Jr. and Liberty University. I've been seeing a lot of what's going on in our church world, and it's just grieving me, right? And so much of what we're seeing is because of this mentality that we've had, that the pastor is all that matters, that the leader is all that matters. And mostly it's these white dudes like leading us astray, really, in this belief that they are the central figure of the church, that they are the most important part of the church, and all that matters to ministry is them. We need a profound shift in our reality about what the church even is. Listen, friends, we are the church, right? There is no church without the us. And in our individualistic society, it can get really easy to feel like we're out on an island sort of by ourselves doing this Christian thing on our own. And the reality is there is no church without the us of church. Church is a community, right? We come together and we take communion as a sacrament, not only of the death of Jesus, but as a reminder that we are all together as a church. We are one. We are called to be one. And I think this culture that a lot of us have been raised in, where the pastor's the only one that matters, where leadership is all that matters, has caused us to forget that the church is not about that at all. That it's about the reality of the us of together, right? Jesus says in John 17 that the world will know us by our love for one another. And that's just profoundly not true in our world, sadly. And so what I want to do is start reconfiguring the way we see the church, right? There is so much out there about pastors and the boogeyman of the day, right? Name your thing. When I was in grad school, it was the Da Vinci Code was going to take out the church. We needed to sort of rally and you know, make sure people weren't led astray by the Da Vinci Code, or postmodern philosophy was going to take the whole ship down. Right now we're having conversations about CRT and race theories and Marxism. These things are going to destroy the church, and these people are building platforms on just talking about these boogeymen, right? I think it's one thing to be pastoral and to protect a flock from bad theologies, from people who want to come in and really destroy the church. I think there are those things, you know, that we can really talk about. But there's much less danger in CRT to the church than there is of simply just forgetting to follow the way of Jesus. This may be weird to talk about, and you may think this sounds weird, but looking at Jesus' ministry, he was maybe one of the most unsuccessful ministry leaders of all time. I mean, you go from this massive following where people are sort of following you all over, and you can't even like sit down without people, you know, wanting to be healed and all of these things. You go from this like huge platform to being betrayed by all of the people closest to you and being put to death by the state. Like when Jesus dies, he's functionally abandoned by everybody. There's like no one really faithful except for some of his female disciples. Even most of his male disciples just abandon him, right? Peter famously denies him three times in front of somebody, much less, you know, Judas actually literally betraying him to the state to be put to death. I think most of us would say a modern day equivalent of that sort of ministry would be one lacking success, right? We want our ministry leaders to build huge things and big churches and amass followings and do these great things for God. And we've built a culture of narcissistic leaders that only care about building their platform. Not only do we crave these narcissistic leaders, but we create them in the ways that we run our churches. And I think a lot of this can be diagnosed simply by forgetting the whole point, which is to take up our cross and follow Jesus Christ, which is to love one another, which is to live lives sacrificed for the other, right? And so when you put ministry and you put Christianity into this context, church is not something we do a Sunday morning for an hour, right? Church is a lived experience of a body of believers operating in this world like Christ did, as mini Christ, which is what the name Christian means, a little Christ. So the church, the work of the church is done every single day by you, by me, by those around us, by the individuals of the church, walking in a kingdom way and doing the Lord's work in this world, no matter what we are putting our hands to, right? And this mentality that the church is built upon leaders, that leaders are the ones sort of holding it all together, that we can't do this thing without these great leaders building massive things, is just wrong. And is leading us, I think, in ways that are just profoundly opposed to the way of the gospel. And so I guess there's no like quick fix solution for any of this. I would love to be able to tell you exactly what to do, how to go about, how do we fix this thing that we're seeing? How do we fix these churches that keep falling and these abuses that just keep happening and the collateral damage of like people losing their faith because of these systems that we have set up. I would love to be able to quick fix that bad boy and just have this all taken care of. But I think the change starts with us and our mentality about even the purpose of the church. What is the church? The church is not ours. The church is not ours to protect and to hold on to make in our own image. The church is the body of Christ. And this body of Christ is not our responsibility. We are to be a part of it, but God will protect and provide for his church. And when we get into this mentality where we think we have it all on our shoulders and we have to, you know, take care of it all, and we have to be the ones to sort of destroy those that want to destroy the church, we miss it. We miss the church, and we turn it into something that looks a lot more like Babylon than it does the church. The church cannot do its work in this world without love. We cannot go into this world as people fighting against this world. We are called to go and love one another, love this world, and thereby show the ways of Christ. And I think the promise held in the book of Revelation is that we can be faithful followers of the church. We can be faithful members of the church because it's God who is doing his work. And so, man, I just want to encourage you. I'm feeling sort of down about the church in general. I'm really struggling, to be honest with you, about how we do this whole church thing and what this looks like. And, you know, even as a pastor, like what my role is in all of these things and how to encourage others to do their work for the kingdom. And the only answer I can sort of come up with is it's God's, right? I don't have to have it all figured out. I don't have to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. I don't have to have this all figured out for myself and lead this into some great promised land. This church is God's and God's alone to protect. And his promise to us is that he will do that work. And so it's to us not to have it all figured out, but to remain faithful. To do our work faithfully for God, to go into this world, showing the world what it is to be a Christian, to be a follower of Christ, to love the world. It's actually pretty simple. You don't have to have it figured out. I don't have to have it figured out. We do have to go in this world loving our fellow humans, caring for other people because they are also made in the image of God, loving people and thereby bringing the gospel with us wherever we go. So I just want to encourage you, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling like de-churched or just struggling with where you're at with the church, the promise of Revelation is that God's got this. And it's not up to some big name, big platform. It's not up to some person out there to sustain the church. It's up to Jesus Christ. And he has promised he will do that work. So be encouraged. I'm probably trying to just encourage myself even as I'm talking, but be encouraged. God's got this. And this is just like one of those, another place where we can see the concerns of the people of Revelation, the people reading the original book of Revelation, are our own concerns still. And we can be comforted in a lot of the same ways that they were comforted. They are seeing a church being persecuted, and they were seeing the goodness of what the world looked like and the worldly systems, and thinking it might be a good idea just to fall into those, to fall in line. And yet John's message is to remain faithful, and we can do the same. Remain faithful, run this race faithfully. So be encouraged. With that, I encourage you to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast just for future episodes. Next week, I promise I really will be talking about Revelation 17 and 18 and the harlot. We're going to finish up in a couple weeks with Revelation 21 and the new creation, and really a foundation for a theology of work, a theology of hustle. So I encourage you not to miss those. Share with your friends. I would greatly appreciate that, just to get the word out. It helps a ton. Rating and reviews, you know all the things. I very much appreciate it. And thanks for listening and being faithful. I'd love to hear what you think. Leave me some feedback. Find me on the socials. And until next time, get out there and hustle.